And now, Dr. Rich Holm is the is the Prairie Doc on call with the Prairie Doc every week on SDPB TV. Dr. Holm, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate hearing from you again.
Hi, Lori. I totally love poetry, but I don't think a lot of people do. I mean, I think it's a special kind of communication that only some people appreciate, and I really don't know why that is, because it rocks my boat. You know,
yeah, I almost have a hard time articulating it. You know, I get a little tongue-tied because it's one of those things that if you love it, you love it, and you maybe can't explain why to the people who don't get it or don't love it.
Robert Frost has been one of those more accessible poets. And if you can enjoy and get into Robert Frost, then you can go the next level, and then you can go the next level. And I think that's it's wonderful.
Do you read poetry now?
I'm writing. I've written a poem. In fact, for the book I'm writing on growing old with Grace, I decided to start it with a poem. You know, All the World's a Stage with Shakespeare, where he talks about a little kid that was born viewing and spewing over his parents, and then what marches him through his life, and then he ends up the baby again with toothless. Elderly person not knowing anything. And it's kind of a sad story. So I rewrote it in my own words, you know, in a kind of a understandable kind of an essay kind of a way. And then I decided I was going to do it in iambic pentameter, like Shakespeare writes. And I read it to an English professor who loves poetry. And she said, yeah, but no one will read this.
Well.
Iambic pentameter, which is, da 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 da. I mean, if you did it four times, it's too rhythmic. If you do it five times, like Shakespeare does, da 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 da, then it's enough like a conversation, and at the same time, it's magical to me. I just love iambic pentameter. So anyway, that's sorry, we got off track. You wanted me to. We should talk medicine.
We should talk. I'm not too hard to distract with conversations about poetry and books. So
you know, poetry is medicine for your soul.
There we go. We're back on track.
that's what it is. And I think the things that excite you and interest you and touch you are the things that make value for living.
Right.
And people who have those things live longer, way longer than the people who don't really connect like that.
So today we're talking about teamwork. How does that connect to, you know, medicine and health and the sort of notion of teamwork or collaboration?
Well, I was writing an essay for the abuse show that we had a couple weeks ago, elder abuse in particular. And I was trying to figure out what it is that makes a person an abusive individual. And of course, we've always thought, I mean, most people, and the literature that I was taught in med school said people who are abused are the abusers. In fact, we know that a third of the people who are abused as children become abusers. Two-thirds don't. Two-thirds do not. Which is a hopeful comment, really.
Right.
But the other side of it is that it really isn't always that group that is the most abusive. One particular psychologist suggests that it is the person who is loved but never learned discipline, never taught discipline, never given constructive criticism. Person who doesn't work as a team. Person who doesn't learn from his or her compatriots to work with them. And so what they end up is not being able to take critique or criticism, and they blow up. I don't deserve this. I've always been loved and told that I'm the greatest thing that ever was. Maybe that didn't even come your way. I mean, you know, I always thought love was the answer to everything, but it isn't. You got to have discipline there. The ball goes out of bounds. It goes to the other team. That's how the game plays. This is the real world. You've got to accept the limitations of the real world. And so abuse, in my mind, is tied to teamwork. And so I think it's extremely important that we teach our kids teamwork. And one of the joys of my life was the being on the DeSmet football team. And it was just warm. You know, you've been on a team before, Lori, right?
Yes, not a sport. Well, actually, I was on a rugby team once, which is a fun rugby. Fact about me that most people don't know. I did play rugby, but very poorly and very briefly. But yes, I've been on many professional teams and some artistic teams for sure. Yeah.
Well, there it is. And in medicine, it's more and more a team job that you work with. The nurse practitioner that is in your office with you, you work with the pharmacist, you work with the nurses at the hospital or the nurses in the hospice group, you work as a team. You send a person to respiratory therapy for help on the breathing and so on and so forth. It's a team thing, and if you're not a team player, your patient gets the raw end of the deal.
How do you invite the patients and their family to be part of the team? What does that look like?
You invite them by listening, by hearing what they say. I think that the most important invitation that we can give as a human being, really, for another person is to listen to them. I mean, actually listen. And when a family is saying to me, as their physician, we're not happy with this. We're worried about Aunt Sally. Or Sally says, you know, it's cold in this room, and I need to get, you've got to give me some more blankets, or whatever it might be. So I'm just responding to the point that you invite teamwork, particularly with family and patients, because they're part of this whole story, by making sure that they know that they're heard.
Yeah. How do we teach it in school or in a family or in medical school? You know, if we understand the importance of it and, you know, the potential impact of it, how do we teach it and pass it on?
You teach it by involving kids in teamwork. And I think you start early. One of the great joys was to be on a team that started in the seventh grade, these guys that I played with in football. We had leather helmets. We had the leftover leather helmets that were still out there. I mean, we played. I'll never forget the joy of playing with Bill Purrington and Ivor Sillins and Rod Hildebrandt, Jim Wyka, and Dave Hanna, and Ronnie Husengay, and all these people in that team. You know, that we worked together as a team, and that brought me to realize I depend on that other person. I'm not alone, and I can't play football for DeSmet all alone. We work together, and the better we work together. Oh, the Wallum boys. I forgot to include the Wallum boys, of course. Arden and Arlen Wallum, you know. Wonderful, wonderful joy. And I think soccer, you see these young kids playing soccer. Yay! I think it's just wonderful. You know, you think about, look at them working together, passing the ball back and forth. And right now, it's March Madness. That's why I brought it up, because we don't have a show tonight. We got bumped because of South Dakota high school basketball. isn't it wonderful? That's a team thing, although it's a small team, and not a lot of people are on that team. Yeah. You know, you know, now, a lot more than it used to be. It used to be boys, and that's it. Now it's girls and boys. You know, I think that the more you include, and it's like doing a play. Working on a play is a teamwork thing. There's a TV show that just came on, and they're working as a team to put on Spring Awakening. This was on Monday night. I watched this new show. It looked pretty good, and Joni and I watched it as a team. But anyway, the idea is that it is people working together to come to one grand objective. And that teaches the ability to take criticism and to grow and to not be a nasty, belligerent, abusive person.
Yeah. We will leave it there. Dr. Richard Holm, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, Laurie.